Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Greetings.
Great salutations.
Of the highest order. This is the Carmudgeon Show, part of the Haggerty Podcast Network.
I am Jason Camisa.
I am Derek Tam hyphen Scott.
Today we are talking about the Hyundai Ioniq 5N.
For performance and the spicy version of the Ioniq 5.
Spicy version. We're going to hop right into it, but if you like our content, please consider joining the Haggerty Drivers Club, which includes unlimited flatbed tows for all of your classics.
A subscription to award-winning magazine.
VIP events and other such.
And unlimited access to valuation tool.
Great. There's a link below. Stay tuned.
For the clap.
There it is. See how that's the bullshit gets tied together, Derek Tam Scott.
The bullshit. It's like when they tie logs together to make a log raft. Mm. It's the bullshit raft.
The bullshit raft. You do realize that was the intro to the show, right?
Well, welcome aboard the bullshit raft. Are we ready to do the part of the Haggerty Podcast Network?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So there has been some additional pushback on my commentary on the WRX being a CVT and my displeasure.
Still again? It keeps coming up just like the fucking R129. See how I did that there?
Right back to vintage Mercedes. That's very, very clever of you.
Several of them in the last week.
People are still very upset that I, you know, shit on the fact that the WRX is and available with a CVT, and specifically the point that I said, if you bought an automatic performance car, you've missed the point. And I stand by that, because if you're going to buy a performance car for the sake of acceleration, you'd have to be mad not to buy an electric car, right? It's just, there's nothing close. And so to that point, I drove the Hyundai Ioniq 5N this past week. So this episode is a day late because of the embargo, so we're holding it till Tuesday.
Because Tuesday is the day the embargo lifts today.
And there are there are two things that sort of bring that back, tie that Ioniq 5N together with the discussion of the WRX CVT. One is, I might have accidentally thrown a draggy in it and found a level stretch of road, and it accelerated to 60 miles an hour without any prep. I didn't precondition the battery. I just floored it in 3.0 seconds, and then did a quarter mile in 11.2 at 122 miles an hour. If there had been a WRX STI super blah, 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 blah with 16 extra turbos on it, it would get its ass completely handed to it. So my point still stands. If you're looking for a performance car and acceleration is what you're looking for, there's nothing close to an EV. This is a $67,000 SUV, ish, sort of shrunken down SUV, that will keep up with Lamborghinis and in flat out races and destroy them in the real world. So performance and gas are just no longer in the same sentence. And the second thing is, Hyundai has completely trolled everyone with a modern automatic car. So Ioniq 5N is a full, we'll go back to the full details of the car, because you probably know nothing about it, right?
I know that it exists.
Yay. Okay. That's all. That's perfect. You represent the audience who probably doesn't know or care anything about a Hyundai. Fucking Hyundai. However,
no, people like the Ioniq 5 quite a lot, right?
Yeah, because it looks like a Jaro car from the 70s.
Whatever it
takes, exactly, right? So Hyundai did a thing, or I should say N did a thing, N team did a thing where they replicate gear shifts.
Oh, yes. I've seen media about this when they first announced they were going to do this.
Yeah. So the idea is you have a choice of three different soundtracks. One is a 2-liter four cylinder and the other two are sort of made up soundtracks. And you
made up like Jetson's
one
car?
Sounds like a jet and the other one sounds like the future. Like it just, you know, I can play sound clips, but nobody's got time for that.
The Evolution one sounds like it's like a merge between like an F1 car and like a 2-stroke dirt bike.
Right.
But like, This feels like it sounds like this.
Okay. Also, I will likely have a video out on the car and you can hear them today also, but it's all, we don't know. It's an edit. But the four cylinder one's the interesting one. So you put the four cylinder soundtrack on, which is N Active Sound Plus. Everything is N. It's anything. Get it? Get what I did there? N. And
like the W Hotel.
Is everything there?
The W stands for whatever, whenever.
I wasn't Westin?
What?
It wasn't Westin?
No. It's a new concept.
Shouldn't it be a double W then? Because it's two W's, whatever, whenever.
World Wide Web.
That's www. /// www. Come on.
HTTP. That's in the wrong order.
Yeah, this is where Jake does a AOL welcome sound effect.
You anyway. Got mail.
Goodbye. You know, in the British version, Joanna Lumley did it. You've got post. It's what? Quite fantastic. Yeah. Hello. You've got post. You didn't know that?
No. You got to regionalize. British,
anyway, yes. So the idea here is that the car is emulating a 8-speed dual clutch automatic with a turbo 4-cylinder. And that is the world's best opportunity to humiliate yourself, right? If that was done poorly, it would just be one of the stupidest gimmicks we've ever seen in cars, effectively. It's so good inside and outside of the car that I guarantee you, you'd be able to fool more than half of car people into thinking the car was a combustion engine car.
Really?
Yeah. And so the reason why it's so good is it's sort of, it doesn't sound like a real engine, right? I mean, but most, it's the same soundtrack that every stupid modern all 4-cylinder car plays through the speakers. And wah, wah, same like farting through a toilet paper sound effect. But what they did was very...
Tube. Toilet paper tube.
Yeah.
You said farting through a toilet paper.
Toilet paper tube, yeah. Forgot the actual word. Farting through toilet paper is...
That's why I thought it would be...
It'd be a great title for a book, you know. Farting through toilet paper and other mishaps of daily life.
That's why I thought it was worth adding the tube.
Yeah, thank you for that. But what they did was study the G-forces, right? So what makes it work is that what you hear and what you feel are identical to what you would hear in a combustion car. So the throttle response, which is gear dependent, right? So it's gear like the...
In a combustion car.
No, in this.
Oh.
Every gear... Does this gear,
thing have gears?
No.
But how does it... So it has... It decides that it is in a gear.
Yeah, you say like...
And it remembers
I'm in first. It acts just like an 8-speed dual clutch. So the power that's available to you in first gear is the power that would be available to you in first
really?
Gear. Yes.
So it attenuates acceleration?
Absolutely. You floor it at 4,000 RPM in third gear and then go into fourth and it's at 2,500. You're not accelerating as hard anymore.
Really?
It is a full... This is
simulation.
Simulation, yeah. And so the throttle response. So it starts with sound, obviously, and it goes to throttle response is different at any rev point. The amount of torque is available that in a way that would follow the torque curve of this thing if it were actually, a 600 horsepower, 2-liter turbo in a 5,000 pound SUV.
You mean it has massive lag?
It has, no.
2-liter would have massive lag. Yeah,
if it had that much power. No, it's sort of replicating the experience, but not necessarily the overall G-forces. Because this thing is really fast. But
so
the
it's
relative
more like G-forces. Does it behave like a turbocharged 2-liter?
It does. It has a little bit of lag, and it has really different throttle response. Matted at 2,000, and it's... or matted at 6,000, like and it's
old,
instant.
Yeah, like an old WRX.
STI. The lag isn't quite... old school lag. It's like sort of more modern lag. And of course the torque curve in each gear feels pretty linear, but Hyundai chose that engine. I mean, my comment to them is if you have any, and you're making up an engine, why the fuck would you make up a 2-liter 4-cylinder? And they're like, we had a long conversation about that. But the reason why is they thought that was the least disingenuous, right? My word's not theirs. Like, this is an engine we make, we should do it. I'm like, well then go pull a Tau V8. Cause their old Tau sounded amazing. That was an unbelievable V8. But the crazy thing is you hit the rev limiter in any of those gears and it's fucking violent. Violent. You know, you're ah, bah, bah, bah. And then when you hit the, like if you're in the limiter and hit the upshift paddle, You get that sort of like transmission confused. Oh, fuck. Now what do I do? No acceleration for a second. And then a clutch kick that will snap your fucking neck.
Yeah.
With blow off noises, not blow off noise, but sort of like overrun pops. It is so fucking good. And then downshifts, you get the D-cell, which is all regen, based on what you expect for the gear.
Yeah.
So, you know, bam, 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 you know, and the higher rev and the lower gears, you get more regen. It is so well done that I genuinely think you could fool most people. And there's a speaker outside in the car that you can turn on or off too. And I was watching an Ioniq 5N drift and it looked and sounded real. It could have been such an enormous fuck up, but wound up being, it's a triumph of software programming. And the reason that ties back to the WRX is because if you think your modern computer-controlled four-cylinder with all this active sound and all this computing shit happening to like remove you from the experience and then put you back in it is so impressive, go drive a Hyundai Ioniq 5N and realize that you're driving a simulation. That's why I don't like modern turbocharged automatic cars. It's so ameliorated by computer shit that the fake version is just as good. In fact, better.
Yeah.
Amazing. So I just think Hyundai just trolled everybody who's got a modern car with active sound and some sort of automatic paddle control transmission just got inadvertently trolled by Hyundai. Fuck you. Yeah. Look, we made a fake experience that's better than your quote unquote real one.
So is that the future?
I don't know. I don't know if anyone's going to use it. I mean, I don't know if it's a thing. It helped on track. I mean, that's the joke, is it actually helps on track. You
have reference points.
Yeah.
But how is the performance different of the car?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's like less performance because there's slower interruption in torque and there's not all the power is available at all times.
I am going to, the next time I get in one, do a 0-60 or a quarter mile run in manual mode with launch control and then in EV mode. And I'm certain. I mean, when you shift, you feel, first of all, an interruption in power and a kick, depending on what mode you're in. And then less power in the next gear. I mean, it just doesn't feel, it is such a good copy of reality that it's genuinely, like, it's perfect.
Okay.
So, all right, let's talk about the car. Ioniq 5 has the dubious distinction of being far bigger in person than it looks.
Yes. When I learned that car has a longer wheelbase than a Telluride, I just could not fathom.
Yeah, it looks so little in pictures.
Yeah.
I think the base car is a 10 out of 10 gorgeous, and I think the N is an 8. It's got a lot of shit going on up front with like this blacked out grill and spoiler. And then in the back, it's got a diffuser and it's 3 inches longer than the regular car. And it's just all sort of fascia Aero treatment. Kit, yeah. It's also 1.5 inches wider because of the fender flares and 0.6 inches lower.
Fender flares.
So it's got promising stance, right? I mean, it's got stance and they kept calling it a rascal. Like all the internal PR documentation was calling, like, it's got rascal-like handling, but it does look sort of a rascal stance. It's just,
it's a troublemaker.
A troublemaker. You know, very much Delta Integrale in its stance, even not nearly as extreme as the late cars, but bulldoggy. Good looking car. It has two motors, one front, one rear. They are very different in their output. I think the rear is in the 400s and the front is in the 200s power wise. And I wish I had my notes with me. But total system horsepower of total system output of 601 horsepower, 641 if you hit NGB button, which is N grin boost. Everything is N. It's like N fucking key and stupidity. It's just all, it's too much gimmick, too much marketing shit on top of it. So four-wheel drive, 600 horsepower, weighs about 4,800 pounds. So figure 5,000. I didn't actually weigh it. It gets different steering than the regular Ioniq 5. So
different calibration or different hardware?
Different rack, quicker rack. This is, I'll finish that. Different steering, different suspension hardware, including adaptive shocks. Everything has been gone through, including the body in white, meaning the main structure of the car, which has, I believe it was 49 additional weld points and like 7, 8, or 9 feet of additional structural adhesive. The whole thing is 11% more torsionally rigid than the base Ioniq 5. And all of this points to, this is not just a sport package of a car. This is a fundamental recalibration of everything.
Yeah, it's re-engineered. It's like what Porsche did when they made RS products, at least in the 90s.
Or more importantly, what BMW when they does and now and did with M cars. And remember, the man behind Hyundai N is the man who was previously behind BMW M.
Doch Niersbach?
I'll give you a couple more guesses.
Would you like something more contemporary?
Yes, a little bit more later in the 50s.
No, he was in the 70s.
This is Albert Biermann. And Biermann was the head of M cars for many, many years. He cut his teeth on E30 racing car, the M3 racing car, and then sort of wound up running M. And he's created this environment where M cars got different body and white and were fundamental redos of the road cars. And if you wonder why Hyundai's performance line is called N,
what comes after M?
Yeah, what comes after you retire from M, you say fuck you to the M guys who you don't like anymore. He retired when BMW killed off the dual clutch in the M5. And they were like, no, we're just going to go with a conventional 8-speed automatic. And he was like, and I'm going to go tell you to go fuck yourself. I'm out. And so he wound up going to Hyundai. And so this is really an M car, an N car, right? This is a fundamental, comprehensive redo of the car, including mounting the seat.
So what does N stand for? Notorsport?
Notorsport, yeah.
Okay.
It stands for next. I don't know.
Probably
Nürburgring. I think if I remember correctly, that's what Hyundai said. They set up camp at the ring when they set up N. But they mounted the seat in such a way that the hip point is 1.6 inches lower. That is huge. I mean, you'll have engineers talk about mounting a seat 0.2 or 0.1 inches lower and having it change the way the car feels. Well, moving it, the seat mounting point itself was down by more than a half an inch, but the way that's mounted is much lower. That tells you what their intent is. Mm. And their intent is to make the best handling SUV in the world.
SUV? Is that how you characterize it?
It's a crossover.
Yeah, I guess
it's a crossover. I mean, you and I both wish it was a hot hatch, and it looks like a hot hatch, especially in N form, but it really is a crossover. I mean, it's much, much taller than, it's much bigger overall than I think, a hot hatch. But it really does drive like a hot hatch, which is interesting. Right, first impressions are the ride's too stiff, which is not really a fair criticism of it if it's really an N car, right? It's not an N line. It's not just kind of a sport package. It's a full thing. But I think the tuning isn't done well enough to support how stiff the ride is. Mm. In the softest mode is what I think should be the hardest mode. In the hardest mode, there's a ton of pogoing. You're just kind of bouncing around all over the place. But the body control that comes from that is unbelievable. So I'll throw in a couple of shots of me sliding around Laguna, because the thing feels like a rear wheel drive, feels like a rear wheel drive sports car in the way that it will rotate off throttle. So you sort of lift, turn in, and it just loves to be sideways and then is easily controllable over its limit, sliding all over the place.
So, given the size, what is this, you're a dyed-in-the-wool enthusiast who believes strongly in X. What is X that this is a better version of?
I don't know. That's a really good question. Really good question, in fact, because I don't think even Hyundai knows the answer of who's going to really buy this car, right? Is it the person who is going to take it to track days? I mean,
is someone who is doing it instead of a Tesla? Are they doing it instead of an M3? Are they doing it instead of a X3 competition pack?
I don't know. And I'm not sure Hyundai knows exactly who's going to buy it yet. I mean, I think this is definitely...
build it and they will come. They can't possibly do that anymore. That's such an old school way of doing things. They have to do like market research where they're like, consumers, blah, blah, blah. And the person who buys this is 38 to 42 years old and makes this many dollars and has this many dogs and children and cats and debts and
I'm not sure mortgages. This car went through that plan. I really don't think so. I think it's so uncharted territory that I'm guessing they're thinking it's Model Y performance custom. I'm going to sneeze.
Is there a Model Y performance?
Yeah, of course.
Gesundheit.
I am psychic. I call that. Also the tingling in my nose. And why is everyone sick at the moment? Why aren't you sick?
I have allergies.
I have a fever for 11 days. This is not not cool, but sorry, you're going to get it now.
You said that last time we recorded.
Yeah, and I'm still sick, so it's been...
remarkable.
Remarkable, but you know, the only thing that makes me feel better is so many of my other friends are like, yeah, I have a fever for 10 days, or yeah, I've had a cold for 10 days too, which is whatever, everyone's got it. I think Model Y performance is probably a really great target because there's a new one about to come out, first of all. I'm guessing when there's a new Model Y within a year or so after the new Model 3. You're looking at Macan.
Okay.
You're looking at X3M, not a whole category of, I guess, even Jaguar F-Pace too.
Who?
Never mind. You know, I'm not sure Alfa Stelvio, I'm not sure who buys performance small SUVs. I don't get it, right? The idea of taking a car, putting it on stilts, and then saying it's track capable is just the dumbest thing to me philosophically. If you want something for a track use, it needs to be lightweight, not complicated, low to the ground and small.
Nobody tracks those things.
I don't think they do. No, I don't. I mean... But, just like the first week that the Cybertruck was in production, every time I went to the track for anything, there were Cybertrucks all over the place. And it's not, no one is ever going to track a Cybertruck. It's just the person who's got a race car. I went to a vintage race. I went to a Lemons race. They're just kind of all over the place. And it's just car people are buying cars that are performant and whatever else, even if they're not going to track it. So it wouldn't surprise me if somebody who has a Miata as a track car says, I just want a sporty daily that's electric and efficient and quiet and does all of this other shit. And I could put my baby seat in the back and do a Home Depot and Costco run. But also I could track it. Maybe I will one day. Maybe one day I will put it on the track instead of the Miata. Or if the Miata breaks, I could. Instead, I'll just tow the Miata there. I don't know. I would love to have a hot hatch. But the one thing I would say is that unlike almost every hot hatch, this doesn't suck on track. Like, that's the sort of hot hatch, deep, dark, deep, dirty secret is that they usually are terrible on track. This thing is phenomenal. So maybe I entered it thinking no one would ever track it. But maybe they will. The car is certainly capable of it. It's got Pirellis on it. So if you do too much sliding around, the tires explode.
They will check out.
They delaminate. But in terms of chassis balance, the car is near perfect. It's got a ton of different modes where you can move power from front to rear. It doesn't, one of the engineers or somebody from Hyundai walked over and said, hey, you made a big statement about Lucid Air Sapphire and you pronounced it the best handling passenger car of all time. Do you want to revise that? My answer was no, not even close. And the biggest reason why is Lucid doesn't really have any modes. Like you get in the Lucid and okay, it's got like, you know, do you want 1,000,000 horsepower or only 750,000 horsepower? And where do you want your stability settings? And that's kind of it. This thing has 5 or 6 pages of N modes. It's like N race and then there's N race endurance, but that's for the battery and there's N race sprint for the battery. And then there's N pedal, which is different from the 3 levels of I pedal, which is regen. I mean, it's out of control. They're not all on one page. There's no way to make all these changes in real time. It's like, it's a UX catastrophe as far as I'm concerned. But I get in the Lucid and the first time I ever slid that car around, cameras were rolling. And I went in, flicked it, the car started to rotate, smacked the gas pedal down, and it knew intuitively that a quick blip of throttle means I'm asking for rotation, because that's what a really well-tuned all-wheel drive system will give you. And then maintenance throttle means I don't want all rear, I want front. And I was able to do these insane slides where it wasn't spinning. The car did exactly what I wanted to do without asking me any questions first. The 5N requires you to engage, you want an end drift analyzer? No, end drift optimizer mode, or do you want end torque distribution mode with everything to the rear? And they're two very different things. Like, come on. Like, just give me a mode where the car does what I fucking ask it to, which is the definition of driver's car, and then maybe we can talk about whether it's as good as a Sapphire, and it won't be. It doesn't. The Sapphire is two motors in the rear that can torque vector and, you know, change everything. But it's up there. It's certainly one of the best handling electric vehicles I've ever driven. And there's a lot of wheel speed management that you have to do in EVs because you don't have the max speed in a gear, even when you're simulating one. So you have to manage just how fast any one of those wheels is spinning. And that's a big job. And what they did it brilliantly. You don't notice how much wheel spin you have. You're not exploding tires, but you're making smoke if you want to. And you're, you know, it's a fucking hell of a car.
Okay. How's the steering?
Dead. Okay. Well, it's one of my biggest complaints is that, so I did beat the motor. So what you can, you know, on a really quick transition on electric power steering, sometimes you can run out of assistance because you're requesting the wheels to move more quickly than the motor is able to do it. And you'll feel that as a resistance. And I did beat the motor once or twice on really big slides that I was doing. So I know the motor really shouldn't get any smaller. But the bigger of a motor that you have, the more it dampens road forces and typically high frequency stuff.
Dampens. Does that make moist?
It dampens it. Yeah, it sprays a hose at it. Okay. It attenuates road feedback. Fuck you.
just keeping the quality of our content.
What as quality? It should be. I'll drop another fuck bomb. Fuck. F. Whatever. N, F, M, letters
the N-bomb? Is that what's coming next?
No!
Okay, just seeing, just probing the limits here.
Derek!
How very dare you, I know.
It damps out high frequency. So a large motor is a mass that's basically mounted to the rack, and it will damps out. Anyway, it attenuates high frequency road feedback, which is what we'll feel as road texture or sort of camber changes.
Liveliness, like yeah. Generally.
That's normal. We're used to that. This is why E-Pass sucks versus, you know, some other types of systems like unassisted or hydraulic steering. However, the one thing that I don't find acceptable on the steering, which is not a glaring problem, is as you're reaching the understeer limit, you should start to have a reduction in effort, right? So your effort's building. In a natural steering setting, you would expect that effort to sort of wane, and that signals your brain that you're nearing the limit or you're at the limit. So when you sort of go past that, you know you're sliding the front tires. That doesn't happen. Alternatively, when you start to approach oversteer, anytime the car is sliding sideways, almost all ever. Every good steering system will sort of give a negative torque, will actually pull back and self-correct on those steering. That's something that has to be programmed into E-Pass. It doesn't naturally do it. The steering will sort of stay where you have it. And they have not yet put that in there. So I talked to engineers about that, and they sort of agreed that the pogoing motions and the stiffest suspension modes are something they're still working on. And that sort of negative steering force is something they're also working on. Porsche's solution to that in early E-Pass was literally just to nudge the wheel. Because what they found was if the wheel didn't do anything, you would spin the car. If the wheel just even nudged you back, would tell you, countersteer now, most drivers would be able to catch it. Until they figured out how to actually make it feel natural. So ride is a bit stiff. Brakes are indefatigable. And they smelled after heavy, heavy track use. And Laguna is a really tough track on brakes, especially with something that will do those speeds and weighs that much.
Yeah.
And the seat's good. The driving position's okay. It's good. It's not amazing. But overall as a car that it's a $67,000 daily
seems
driver.
Reasonable. Actually.
I mean, I go back and forth. Because it doesn't qualify for anything.
Well, everything is so expensive now, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, to be able to
How much does an X3M? Aren't those like 80 or 90 or something? Yeah.
You're going to spend 100 on that. So it is a reasonable, it's a bargain in the sense, certainly when you start to consider performance.
Yes.
Because I don't know of another compact / midsize SUV that would be able to keep up with this.
At any price.
I don't think an Urus would keep up with it. We're going to find out. I'm going to do a video on it, hopefully. But yeah, I don't think an Urus Performante, if it could keep up with it.
There's a Performante version of the Urus?
Yeah, of course. If you were Lamborghini, you would do it too.
Yes, yes, yes. I like cash.
X3M, X5M, GL. We haven't seen new GLC, 63 AMG.
Macan,
but
Turbo.
I don't think any of them. I don't know. I don't have real numbers on that car yet, but I don't think anything is in the low 11s, which is pretty amazing for $60,000. Yeah. Now, everyone always says there's a lot more to speed than just, you know, straight line speed, or the usual thing is I could make a steak in a microwave and it'll cook faster, but you know, fuck EVs. A lot of that every time I say anything nice about an EV. But this one you can put in manual mode and pretend.
This one comes with a grill.
Yeah, pretend, yeah. Yeah, it does. We're in a new world here. This whole EV performance sort of equation, adding fun into it is something that I don't think anyone's tried yet.
Remouts would like to have a word with you.
No, I mean for the daily drive.
Or Lucid.
Is a Sapphire fun?
You just said it was the best handling thing ever.
Oh yeah, but I'm not fun it's not as fun as it would be if it were a combustion engine car.
You're talking about track environment. Is this thing fun in the real world also?
And yeah, that's what I mean.
How is it like that different from a Lucid? You know,
it's the modes. It's this. It's the shift paddles and the stupid
things
modes,
that you were just shitting on.
I don't. No. Not all that other shit. It's the ability to change the engine noise and gear. That's what it is. Did you
back road it? Did you do Carmel Valley Road in it?
I did Laurel's Grade, okay. Which is...
It's too fast.
It's too fast.
Sweeping.
And then I did a bunch of roads around Laguna Seca that the tour does.
The Pebble Beach Tour does.
They're hideously bumpy.
Yeah, so I'm sure it was a little bit highlighting the...
I did it immediately afterwards, the same exact road in an ND3 Miata. And I'm not yet allowed to talk about the ND3 Miata because there's a bit of a embargo on that. However, I'm willing to say that roads that a Miata is able to suck up and not be bothered by were very offensive to the Ioniq 5N. Both in heaving and bounding
that
and
kind of
bump
undoes
stop.
A lot of the magic of a hot hatch if you're going to try and imagine this as a hot hatch substitute.
I mean, it wasn't terrible.
Because hot hatches usually thrive in that environment. That's where you're like, I'm so glad I'm in a hot hatch.
I mean, that road is, the road that I was on was miserable. Just horrendously paved. And it wasn't that the N wouldn't do it. It just beat me up a little bit more than I thought necessary, right? But Biermann... In Hyundai's defense, Albert Biermann's philosophy in all the M cars was let's make it ride like shit because that's sporty, right? All of the M cars historically have ridden way too stiff. You know, the Brits were always
28 isn't pretty.
Oh, that was before him.
Oh,
sorry, I have to find a tissue.
Lest I snot.
Okay. We're not gonna cut this. We're gonna leave this in. Okay. So I guess to me, when I think about glorious M car, I think E39 or E at the latest. I don't think it's a glorious car. I mean, obviously for me, I would rather have an E28 or an E34 M5.
I mean, I'd rather have an E39 530i, but I don't know what Biermann did with that generation of cars, but the later ones, you know that German cars always just ride too stiff.
Because they have very good pavement there.
Right. And they're... philosophy is very different than, for example, the Brits who have
poor pavement.
Right. And so those cars just
DGAF. But not as poor as ours.
Yeah. British B roads. I think our roads are probably worse, but they drive a lot faster on their B roads. Like Brits, all ass.
Yes.
70 mile an hour past everyone's driveways with like in a road that's 3.5 feet wide. Mercedes always did a better job at you know, saying, okay, well, let's have some body roll. Let's move things around. Let the car move around. And I don't think BMW M ever did. So it really shouldn't be that much of a surprise that Biermann's next venture is N, and all the N cars are a little bit stiffer perhaps than they need to be.
Mm.
But this one, maybe it's a philosophy that's baked in. Maybe that's on purpose. I don't mind it because it's a characteristic if it's done properly. And I just don't think this one is fully baked yet. They're working on software updates to control. Funny enough, it's actually a software. They can control the heaving with software because there's a phase problem with what I was told is how quickly the shocks can react, that the shocks can stiffen up and relax quickly enough that it can create its own bounding and heaving issues. So there's a lot of stuff that they can do with software to just try to fine tune that little stuff out. And that they were, the most important thing to me was that the engineers were all aware of this and were happy to work on it. And we're like, no, we're going to make it better. We see it. It's okay. And you know, it's still early days and they can OTA update the cars.
And, when is it due to be available for purchase?
I don't know. Imminently.
So it's not early days. It's coming out soon.
I mean, it's, yeah, but they can,
you're saying they often make changes to the production
and they are car companies often make changes. You know, up to the day the first car is delivered. And then once you're able to do over the air updates, they can change software settings, afterwards. I think the car is fully baked, but not perfect. The big offensive thing, like the key weighs zero. It's the most plastic offensively. Like I'm not one of these people who lifts up a car key and says, wow, this feels good or feels bad. I've never noticed, right? Other than Ferrari that has a leather key that actually smells like the interior. It's fucking really nice. I don't think I've ever really paid much attention to a key. Aston Martin Crystal key, yeah. But everything else is just a friggin' key. I pick that up and I'm like, this is a fucking joke. Like, just throw it out. So that's a ding, big deal. The steering being dead, that's a bit of more of a big deal for me because I'd rather have something that feels alive when I'm driving it at, you know, under 10 tenths. But the UX, they need to go back to school on. Like they have to learn to edit.
How's the rest of the UX? I mean, if you're just not playing around with modes.
I didn't honestly spend much time with it. The way this program worked, and it was a program that Hyundai put on at Laguna Seca, was the first thing I did, the first time I ever even saw one of the cars, was walking up to it to get in to do a lead follow lap. And I don't know if they told the person who was doing the lead follow group that we were going to be building speed, which is what they told us. And he went for it. And so my first 5 minutes was a 9.5 tenths lap in this car where I was at the back of the group and everyone was scrambling to keep up with the driver. And then, so we did 3 20-minute sessions in the car and then the road drive was like 10 minutes. And that was sort of like a hurry up and go do it and whatever. So I never got a chance to play with stereo settings and nav and whatever. Mm. But I was kind of annoyed that there are a lot of functions that there are physical HVAC controls, but there are a lot of functions like fan speed that you have to do on a screen. Mm. I just think all of that should be outside of a screen.
Yep.
In an ideal world. But the car as a car functions. I mean, it works. We know that Ioniq 5 has won so many awards. It was, I think, Top Gear's Car of the Year, and then it was World Car of the Year.
But so it is genuinely and authentically fun?
On a racetrack at 11.5 tenths, it was a riot fun. On a smaller cone course, sliding around, drifting it was really, really good. It went through the tire so quickly that I can't see anyone doing that in the real world. I mean, literally four minutes of playing around and tires delaminated because Pirelli. But on the road, it was good. I mean, I guess the measure there when you don't have a combustion engine and a great manual to play with, for example, the question just becomes, is it a good daily driver that doesn't offend you as an enthusiast? Like, does it work as a daily driver? And I would like more time before I make a full verdict on it. But I do think, yeah, it does. It's got good seats. It's a nice enough interior. They made some changes to it. There's a center console, which there isn't done in 95 because they thought that the end should feel more like a cockpit. Then what matters after that, annoyingly, it's just like, does CarPlay work wirelessly? Like, you know, what else is there? But it does have the sort of shifty modes, which I think will wind up being a gimmick for people until they play around in traffic because it's just so stupid fun to do it. Does it work as a transportation device that could haul ass on a back road? Yep. That could do track duty. Yep.
It does a hot hatchy sort of thing.
It does hot hatchy stuff and fits all your shit and looks pretty damn good. I wish it looked as good as the regular one, but that's maybe too high of a bar.
I mean, yeah, the highest bar, one of the highest bars in modern automobiling.
Yeah, yeah. But so cool that, like, who thought Hyundai would be doing
this kind of stuff? If you saw the Veloster N, then you could say, I like this trajectory. Yeah. I'm curious for what lies ahead.
I really wish we got, like, an i30N.
Yeah.
Which is the Golf. Like, so think about Veloster Scirocco, i30 is Golf in that, you know, it's the sort of more upright, normal,
more practical, usable.
That thing with the powertrain, you know, an i30N would be like the best hot hatch, certainly current hot hatch, possibly ever.
I mean, neither of us has driven any of those French cars, and everybody raves about Megane RSs and, you know, all that stuff. We just have no experience with it.
Yeah.
I've heard it's all wonderful. Not all, but I've heard there are some wonderful ones.
I've heard the same, but
I've never driven a Clio Williams, if you go back to the old days. I've driven a 205 GTI, which was epically fun.
Was it? I took one and I thought it was good.
Which flavor was it?
I think it was an early 1.9.
I drove a Rally, which is 1.3 Webers and very light from the factory.
Oh.
Like very light.
Okay.
I really enjoy the Rally. And that's the reason why the 1.3 Rally is worth, you know, as much or more than a 1.9. You know, I think that's the formula.
I think Weber's, like, you know, carburetor noises would really wake that thing up. Because the one that I drove, what I noticed about it was...
What do you feel about the motor in the 405 MI16?
It's nice. Yeah. I mean, I love the way it pulls. It doesn't make the best noises in the world. Yeah. But no, so the one I drove couldn't have been a 1.9.
They made 1.6s.
The 1.6. It was a 1. It's got to be a 1.6. And I remember thinking it wasn't all that quick and it didn't have all that much acoustic personality of a motor, but it was a nice cohesive car and better. It was a better car than a Mark II because they were sort of contemporary. Mark II GTI, but the Mark II was more fun because it was shittier. Like that's what I remember thinking. Mark II had a bit of more of an edge. It was a little bit crappier, frankly.
Mm. The Rally has like... incomplete door panels, like there's painted metal visible and stuff like that, like in an old Beetle and Webers and stuff like that. It was pretty cool.
That's kind of cheating. I mean, I would love to spend more time on one, especially in a back road, because apparently they are like really.
Yeah,
really
I was good. On a back road. Yes,
I was sort of in normal traffic, and I thought, okay, better car than a Golf. I'd rather a worse car.
Well, all that to say, none of us have driven any of the contemporary being from the last 25 years, French hot hatches. But I think that's probably a formula that they're very good at, and I would be really keen to try out some of those Renault Sport products. For example.
I should pull up some British test magazine test between an i30N and. Any of the French stuff. Cause I honestly, having experienced so many modern car, every modern car that's available here. I don't see, I've not seen a bunch of ingredients that were better than the ingredients in the Veloster N. Mm-hmm. Like that to me was just such a great combination of attributes that it was the best of the best. It was like the most characterful engine. All right. I remember the gearing wasn't perfect for the engine. The shifter was okay. It wasn't like amazing, but sort of like it was just like 8.5 out of 10, 8.5 out of 10, 8.5 out of 10, 8.5, 8.5, 8.5. So to be able, and I don't know of any other car in that category that has any attribute that beat that 8.5. Like there is no 10 on a shifter. Yeah. Civic Type R, or 9 maybe, but there's no one, anything that did better. So I'd have a hard time wrapping my head around something being better than a Veloster N or an i30N.
Well, we have to go to France or the UK or the continent or something to try those. I'm
just start booking a flight right now. Here we go.
Yes.
Bonjour. Okay. Well, there it is. The Hyundai Ioniq 5N has punked all of you who drive automatics. I love that. By making a better DCT driving experience that is 100% fake than any of the real stuff.
Rivian can get a couple of development cars from Hyundai and use those as they bring the R3X to reality.
Oh, that's a really neat idea. Huh. That would make that even more fun. Although, I don't know. I go back and forth, and you know that we're going to get comments on this, and people are going to be like, this is stupid. It's stupid. If it's an EV, just call it an EV and be done with it. But it works so goddamn well that it's won me over, even though I initially thought
skeptical.
It was dumb. Yeah.
Those are always stupid. The best, though. I mean, because if you go in liking it, and then you like it, you're like, okay, I liked it. Maybe it was confirmation bias, but then if you go in expecting to dislike it, and you have a full 180, then you know that it's genuine.
Yeah.
Because you had a bias against it while going in. And if it was compelling enough to undo the bias and turn you into a promoter.
It's a hell of an achievement. Yeah. And it could have been, all I told the engineers, what 1% off if the sound didn't match the G-force or you guys forgot to make the throttle response different in any gear, if it was 1% off, you would have looked like morons. But it's 100% dead on. You look like heroes and you made something new that the world has never seen before. And I can't believe the feeling of hitting that limiter and then smacking the next gear is the most authentically like supercar experience I've ever had. And it's fake.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, what a world. What a world. I'll take my manual, you know, I'll take it, take my.
Of course. That's the subtext of everything that you or I ever says.
Well, on that very predictable note, unfortunately, it's true. Join us for next week. Next week, we're also going to be late because for 2 weeks in a row, there was a Tuesday embargo. So it's a different car. I promise it's not electric.
And by you promise, you mean guarantee?
No, it's electric.
That it is?
Annoying! How annoying is it? Kind of all the most exciting cars at the moment are electric. I can't do anything. Hey, somebody please make a 9,000 RPM hot hatch. Shut me up.
Hmm. That sounds nice.
Let's go build one.
All right.
Okay. We will see you next week. Thank you for joining. This has been the Carmudgeon Show.